Welcome to the M3 Podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here.
Welcome back, M3 family. It's me, your host, Mermaid Bree. I believe this interview episode couldn't have come at a better time, and I don't believe that people just come into your life by coincidence. These are two amazing souls that I connected with, and I know it's been for a reason and will continue to be for multiple reasons in the future. Pete Ciccone and Emily Chang are very inspirational people to me who are in the competitive industry with bodybuilding, and sports psychology is a new chapter of my life that I feel like I get to be learning as a student and get me to step back on stage. That's something I've wanted to do. I've told myself I'm going to retire, and it took someone like Pete and to have the knowledge like Emily to get me to feel like I can go back and compete again. The competitor never really leaves the person who is in that soul and heart and being to do that exact thing. And if you're a competitor at heart, you understand that itch, that feeling, that desire will always live inside of you. And Pete is somebody who I had no idea was a registered nurse, is a huge background, has a strength and conditioning specialist certification. He's a physique specialist. He has written for articles like Oxygen Magazine, Status Fitness Magazine, and he's been a personal trainer and bodybuilder since 1989, longer than I've been alive. He's coached dozens of competitive athletes of all experience levels, and he is the CEO and founder of 619 Muscle. I am truly inspired by his level of knowledge when it comes to supplementation, and we get to go into the details of that in this interview, where I had already hit the record button and had gotten us started on our interview where we were just talking about introductions. He's been inspired to start his own podcast. I am one of his first guests to be on his podcast, and I can't wait for that interview to come out. I believe it's already ready to go. So when that does publish, I will share that with you all. And you know, you can find that on my social media page here. And I'm so proud of this person's ability to take action. When they want something, they go after it. And so Pete is that exact person. I'm truly inspired by Emily, who is his teammate, his girlfriend, and partner in life. And her and I just sat down and sat through all the things that we wanted to go through for this 2024 season. We were talking about goals we have set out, the ability to sit and have confidence and to stand in authority, and to have that opportunity to be in their presence and be a guest on their show and to set that example is something that I know gets people to light the fire under their own asses and take action. So I can't wait to share this interview. We already got into it, and you get to hear their story, hear them convince me what it takes to make bodybuilding healthy again. And for that reason alone, I'm ready to step back on stage and to compete and to be that true bodybuilder that I know can be healthy both inside and out. So let's get into today's episode.
Well, what are we going to do right first? I was talking to Brett. We were kind of kicking a lot of things around, but right now I want to focus on business. So 619 Muscle Seminar Sundays or Supplement Sundays. Whoa. And so what I want to do is I want to do at first like 10 to 15 minutes on, you know, hey guys, you know, this week we're talking about creatine monohydrate versus creatine hydrochloride. Do you know the difference? Do you know why? Do you even need it? Here's why. Blah, 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 blah. And I'll have on different people at first that will give me their experiences on different supplements they use for different purposes. I'll give an example just real quick. I had a guy come into the shop yesterday. I was in my office. The door's closed. He was talking. He's a lacrosse player, high school. And he's asking the girl working behind the counter in the East County shop where you went to visit.
Yeah.
You know, I need something with more for more fatigue fighting. I don't need something in the, a lot of the pre-workouts have stimulant and they have pump, make me feel big and full, but they don't cut back on fatigue. I'm reading about fatigue fighting and how fatigue happens in muscles, but I don't understand it. So I had to say, listen, I opened my door. I said, come here. And we talked about beta-alanine and citrulline malate. Beta-alanine is amazing for anaerobic glycolysis. It promotes ATP production within the muscle cell in the anaerobic environment. So for heavy weight training, sprinting, hard, fast, high-intensity cycling, high-intensity anaerobic activity, beta-alanine cuts down on lactic acid burn, and it allows the body to recycle ATP or recycle ATP through lactic acid through a giant
acetylcholine.
And citrulline which is marketed now as a vasodilating pump product, was actually studied extensively around the same time as beta-alanine, but it didn't market very well in the bodybuilding communities because it buffers lactic acid through the aerobic pathways, through aerobic glycolysis. So it actually works to create fatigue-fighting effect in the body, and it's very palpable. You can really feel it.
I'm thinking muscle cramping. Like it stops muscle cramping.
Yeah, and what it also what it does is it takes your lactic acid burn. Like if you're doing even swimming or surfing or high-intensity cycling that's not to the point of failure but longer distance, say grinding up a hill, as your legs start to burn, you pedal a little bit lighter, your body breathes. So when you're oxygenated in the presence of oxygen, it pulls lactic acid out of the muscle and it recycles it very much the same way that beta does, but it does it through the aerobic pathways. So as a lacrosse player, you want both of those. There was a really cool product several years ago that was actually manufactured by a guy here locally named Joey Rodriguez. He created a product company called Mansports. They had a product that was called beta. It was called Body Octane. And it was very simply creatine, monohydrate, beta-alanine, and citrulline. But in effective doses, not these superhuman doses that people are scarfing them down in pre-workouts now, which is a lot having to do with how much beta do you have? How much beta do you have? How much citrulline? So it's more for marketing. 8 grams of citrulline is a waste of money if you're using it for performance. If you're using it to market it, because I have 6, you have 7, people want to buy your product because it has more. You're paying as a consumer for more product that doesn't do anything more from the clinical perspective. So anyway, those type of conversations are short, but it can get people to at least say, oh, wow, that's really interesting. And maybe we hit a person who might want to, like this lacrosse kid, try a product that will help him rather than spending money on something that's overhyped. And so what I want to do is put those out on a regular basis. At first, just that, so people could develop a trusting relationship with 609 Muscle, our store, and come in and buy products. Eventually, I'd like to start interviewing a lot of the product manufacturing people that I know, even the owners, like Rich Gaspari. Sean Ray has a product with Mutant Labs, Seth Ferrosi, some of the bigger guys that I know from way back in the day that now have supplements. It'd be really cool to utilize some of their popularity to get more eyeballs on our stuff, but also to help inform people. And I think that's the start of it. So ideas.
This is recording our
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yes.
But then what's really interesting, and this is something where I'm glad you guys actually kind of hooked up, because do you know what her master's degree is in, actually?
No.
Tell her.
Oh, it's in performance psychology.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
This is gonna be a great conversation.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of as we've met and kind of, you know, watched along on your story and the stuff in terms of just feminine embodiment and empowerment and things like that, you know, we've been going through an evolution together as a couple, but she's also been going through that from an educational standpoint with her master's degree, which is a lot of more intense stuff, as an athlete, as a partner, and then also as an individual.
Oh, and I was
and a coach too, coach, for yeah. sure. Yeah. So it's exciting to have you guys connect, because I think there's some common ground there that may end up bleeding over and hyper-pollinating.
Let's get the show on the road. Yeah. I want to already have this be the beginning of the podcast, and because I do intros already. I do intros before when I'm already finished and getting ready to publish the episode, talking about it. And so I'm like, I'm going to be like, we already got into it. Here's the topic right here. Boom. And we're going about supplements and how even a master's in psychology performance is amazing for what you see people doing on stage. That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. And how somebody feels, how they perform, that's a make or break right there.
Yeah.
So this is great. Woo! Welcome. All right. Welcome back, M3 family. It's me, your host, Mermaid Brie. I have Pete and Emily in my house right now, literally. I'm so excited to have you guys. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, we're excited too.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So we met on a photo shoot, and that was more of a hike than a photo shoot,
I think. Oh my gosh.
Yes, that was terrible.
That was tough, but I mean, they wouldn't have put us to the test if we weren't athletes, so.
Well, I was terribly embarrassed, because I know you probably remember, she does definitely, but I was carrying the tent, which wasn't that heavy, but up and down those damn stairs.
You were injured,
too. I couldn't breathe, and my plantar fasciitis kicked in a little on my feet, which I deal with all the time, but I couldn't breathe. I couldn't breathe. And I was like, I am in such poor shape cardio-wise. I couldn't believe it. Well, the next day we got home and I had pneumonia. I was like, why can't I freaking breathe? I'm walking upstairs. And yeah, you know, I'm a heavier guy now, and part of my bodybuilding now, I'm trying to keep gaining mass, but I have no idea. I was so embarrassed I couldn't breathe. And these guys are like sprinting up and back, and you grabbed the whole tent from me at one point. I got it. Give me a minute. But it was unbelievable. We get home the next day, I'm like, now I really can't breathe. I had to get some antibiotics.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, because I'm not that out of shape. Jesus.
Well, okay, you've had your fair share of cardio. I want to hear about your background in bodybuilding.
I started bodybuilding because I was a very chubby kid. My self-perception was I was also small, being half Mexican, half Italian, tiny little guy in high school. In the sophomore year, I was short and chubby. And if you're a big guy, and I like to say this in bodybuilding, and you're in high school, and you're big, even if you're chubby, you could be a linebacker, you could be a bully, you can be, you know, that big guy in class that people are either scared of or they befriend to feel safe. But when you're little and chubby, fuck it, you're invisible. Mm-hmm. And I was invisible. And so I started playing Pop Warner football freshman year, and I lost a little bit of weight with the activity. I discovered weight training. And, you know, within a year of the cardio that comes from football training and the weight training, my body started to change. And my dad bought me a Muscle and Fitness magazine at that time. And I read it cover to cover until the pages fell out. I must have memorized every page with all the details between the ads, which talked about supplements. This was back in 1984, 85. And the articles that talked about the pro bodybuilders and the photos, which were amazing. And I fell in love with the sport. And I realized if I lifted weights and I watched what I ate, I controlled my food, as the magazine said, higher protein, lower carbs, and all that kind of stuff, my body really would respond. It was amazing. And so I went from this short, little, invisible fat kid. Within a year, I wasn't any better at football because I was still tiny. But people were starting to notice. And they said, wow, what do you do for your chest? Or, you know, blah, 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 this and that. And so we started talking, and I joined the weightlifting club in high school. And then my dad, who was always in really good shape, he used to train in the basement with one dumbbell. And he would take the weights on and put them off, because that's all we had back then. And one arm at a time, one shoulder at a time. Amazing to watch him train. So I'd sit there as he was smoking his cigarette and doing his bodybuilding, because that's what he did back in the Marine Corps. And I'm watching him. I was like, wow. And I'd watch his muscles get full of blood and pump one side at a time. And I was just amazed, because the muscles would come to life as he was training them. I was like, Dad, that is so cool. He's like, here, you try it, kid. But of course, I was weak. Weak, tiny little boy. And I said, I don't like to be weak. I want to be strong like my dad. I want to be noticed. I want to have more self-respect, because body image, as you know, is everything. Mm. Mindset is everything. And as I started developing my body, I started realizing how much more empowered I felt when I had control of my appearance. So bodybuilding for me became life-saving, life-changing, but empowering, which is way more than just looking good. It's actually good for the soul. And I think this is where I fell in love with the power of the craft of bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. And I started competing when I was 19. And I won my very first show, which was really cool. It was a very small show called the Whaling Classic in Somerset, Massachusetts, a tiny little town south of Boston. And from there, I was hooked.
Is that home?
I grew up in Boston. Yeah, okay. I grew up in actually just west of Boston in a suburb called Leominster, Massachusetts. Kind of right next door to where Jay Cutler grew up.
Oh, nice.
Yep. And as I grew in bodybuilding, I started just reading and learning and studying. After a brief stint in the military, I went to school for nursing, because that was the quickest way to make money so I could pay for my bodybuilding habit. Buying my magazines, buying my food supplements, helping with my mom with groceries, and then moving out and doing my own stuff. And I helped manage a gym back in Boston, small one, on the weekends. Then I worked during the week and I went to school. And when I got my nursing degree, I said, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm heading west, because out west is where all the bodybuilders are, you know, in LA. And that's where I originally wanted to go. Yeah. I made a brief stop for, ended up being 5 years in Phoenix. Loved Phoenix. That's a bodybuilding town, almost. It's like a wannabe bodybuilding town, but it's growing, right?
Yeah.
But it's a great place to put your roots for a short time. And then I ended up coming out to San Diego because my brother was going to school out here. And we roommated together for a while for money to help him out with his schooling. And then I met the guys at what was World Gym, now TG, mm-hmm. and I was home. I planted my roots. And it's been a crazy journey since then. And I turned pro in 2013, and I've done several pro shows since then. And I'm planning on another run this summer. We'll see how it goes with business and stuff, because business is busy. But I've realized with bodybuilding, if you can prioritize your schedule and plan and set your goals and stick to them, you can tend to be more productive mm-hmm. if you can control all the pieces. Mm-hmm. And she's doing amazing now with her career. She's competed before we met and started hanging out, done several shows. Tell them.
So did you meet in TG, both of you, which is called The Gym? It's in Pacific Beach, yes. in San Diego.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you were on prep at the time? Were you competing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So how many shows have you done in total, Pete? Do you know?
I think 54, something like that.
Wow.
No, 53, 54. Yep.
And how many shows have you done, Emily? I can say I have not done 54.
Oh, well, yeah. Definitely not 54. What's yeah. seven?
Seven, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm actually about the same. I think I've done seven. Yeah. Shows. Yeah. So.
Well, and it was awesome because I was watching her physique change kind of from a distance. And I was like, wow, she's got such a good work ethic. She's so strong. And I was a fan, but you know, not a creeper fan. Just, I love the sport.
Admiration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, anyone who's working hard, it doesn't matter, guy or girl, whatever, you end up being like, oh, awesome. She's really putting her heart into it. And like, we were training this morning. She was doing legs. And you remember that other, there was another young lady down the mm-hmm. other corner of the gym yeah. by herself doing split squats. And she was, I've just working so hard. Nobody's watching. But it's like we always say, you know, it's the things you do when nobody's watching that are things that make all the difference. And like, I would see her come in sometimes lunging by herself, 100-pound bar on her back and struggling to get it off. And I just laugh. I'm like, what is she doing? Crazy girl. Because nobody was training that way. That was awesome.
Say, crazy you know, girl, I like you.
And over the course of time, we just developed a rapport that was more of a friendship than anything else for a long time. And then as things settled out, she moved back home. And then when she ended up coming back here, and we're like, hey, we should train, basically, huh?
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a coach and a trainer now. So in the beginning, when I saw that passion, I was like, you should coach people. You know, and it was kind of funny because when we first met and started talking, she was in pre-med, mm-hmm. you know, totally different pathway. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's backtrack. I'm here for it. We can go with all the tangents because I'm like, wait, we want to talk about 619 muscle, but I also want to catch up with Emily's story too. So where's home for you? What got you into? I think it's so cool that you have the major that you have and the master's that you have. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, pretty much my story begins in Northern California. So I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area originally. When I turned 18, well, basically before that, I've been an athlete my entire life. I played 10 years of soccer, 4 years of varsity lacrosse. Goalie, shout out to all the goalies out there. when I turned 18, basically my parents couldn't afford college tuition for my sister and I. So I joined the military, graduated boot camp joined November 2012 and then got out sometime in January 2013. So I was a hospital corpsman for 7.5 years.
Wow.
So I actually started my bodybuilding journey while I was in the military because I wasn't a field athlete anymore. So I was like, oh, well, how do I keep in shape? You know, people go to the gym, so let me try this out. And basically just kind of, you know, watch people online or kind of watch what other people were doing in the gym. I'm trying to figure it out myself. And then I found the sport of bodybuilding because a lot of active duty people would compete and just started getting into it. And that's pretty much how I met Pete when I got a little bit more serious in the sport and fell in love with it. So like what Pete was saying, I was originally pursuing to become a Navy doctor, but found out that I love helping people on more of an intimate level of personal training with athletics. Pretty much I love the sport of bodybuilding because of the internal and external transformation of the human body. So that's what really hooked me to it and then made me decide to make a huge career shift from going pre-med to personal training. And then I got out in 2020. And then for everybody that probably knows, that's when the peak of the pandemic was hitting the world and all the gyms in San Diego pretty much shut down. So I left San Diego and went to Omaha, Nebraska, where everything was pretty much open still, and became a trainer out there. Finished my degree in biology, actually became the number one trainer in my gym, surprisingly, and moved back to California when the pandemic was, lightening up and California was starting to open back up again. And then came back down here. Oh yeah, I forgot the part where I turned pro in bikini. I was on deployment, but so that happened while I was active duty. But eventually decided to switch to wellness when I came back to California because my legs wouldn't stop growing after all the years of playing soccer and jumping, diving, kicking, and stuff like that. So,
which I'm backtracking. I'm backing up the 2020s when you decided to make the career change.
Yeah,
and TG was one of the few gyms that were like undercover open with all the black tarps. And that's, I remember working out there during 2020. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if we weren't supposed to, but sorry.
Yeah.
I
remember.
I should have just stayed here. But at the same time, and what a great path because everything happened for a reason. And so then you became a part of 619 Muscle as a coach.
Yeah.
And what has it been like going through the experience on the other side? Because I love competing. Now that I was at the show on Sunday, I keep having that itch. Like that itch just tells me like, maybe just get out of retirement, go back. And I'm like, will they accept me out for WBFF? What do you think? Do you think MPC will have you come back?
Oh my God, of course. Of course. And, I love the MPC because one of the things, because, when I was growing up too as a bodybuilder, the WBFF had just started. And even before. And, I competed in a natural organization as well back in Boston when I was younger. And then coming out here, I competed in a Muscle Mania, which is a different organization, did well there. And then the NPC was just a bigger fishbowl. So as WBFF started to form, we were all looking at it like, oh, wow, it's exciting. It's a lot more flashy. It's a lot more media coverage and stuff. And I actually know the Rodney Jang from Status Fitness magazine. I used to write for them because they do a lot of the coverage of WBFF. They're from Vancouver. I don't know if you've heard of Status Fitness, but they're a very, very popular magazine with WBFF. Pretty much, I would write for Rodney and I would say, hey, what about this person? What about that person? What about me? What about putting people like us? It's like, well, we're from Canada, they're from Vancouver. So, we pretty much focus on WBFF athletes. Pretty much. It wasn't a set rule, but every time you go through, I'm like, I don't know that person. I don't know that person. I don't know the person that covered, but I knew all the NPC and IPB top level athletes or knew of them. But it was interesting. So the one thing I think that I liked about the NPC and IFBB, and it's not a knock on WBFF at all, it's just a different style.
Oh, I have a lot to knock.
Well, I know that's a whole other podcast, right? Because since that time, the time where I was looking at what I really liked about the NPC was every show was pretty much the same. The outfits were essentially the same, whether it's bikini or the little boxer brief things that the guys are wearing, whatever. And it was more, for me, of a sport. It was less of a pageant or a show. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you one thing that I didn't like. When I did Muscle Mania, at that time I was living in Phoenix and I came to LA and we did the Muscle Mania World Championships. And backstage, we competed. I trained so hard. It was the World Championships for these guys. It was drug tested. And I came out and I ended up taking third to a guy, Stan McQuay, who's a IFBB pro also now. But when we went backstage for the finals and we're getting pumped up and ready to go, the promoter for the show came out. His name's Lou. And Lou said, now remember, guys, this is not a contest. This is a show. So I want you to play it up for the camera, work, look like you're having fun, look like you're heated in the heat of battle and be dramatic because this is a show. And I said, well, what does he mean? It's a contest. It's a bodybuilding contest. I think I'm going to take first or second or third. So anyway, the trophies were given out. Mm-hmm. I went backstage. I looked at my trophy. It was this beautiful piece of glass. and it said Musclemania 1999. There was no placing on it. It was the same as the guy who took first, the guy who took second. I took third. The guy, they were all the same. And I looked at all the trophies that were yet to be given out to all the champions that were competing, or the fourth, or also lands and everything. There's no value to placing, which is really one of the things at the core of the sport of athletics and competition to me, is everybody wants a participation medal, for sure. But you've got to have a winner, and you have to designate the winner. Otherwise, why compete? You don't compete for yourself. Yes, you do. And in the end, bodybuilding is an individual sport. I understand that. But I was a competitor. And if I'm not going to be rewarded, even if it's a third place reward or a recognition, what's the point to me? And then I realized WBFF, from my perception, was much the same way. It's a show. It's a pageant. And there's nothing wrong with that. Show, you know, beautiful, fit physiques. I've been to a couple of championships here in Orange County, I think, in Long Beach. They had a couple at the beautiful convention center there. But it was beautiful. It was a very, very beautiful show. And everybody comes all dressed up in suits and beautiful outfits and pageantry. But then you get back to brass nails and you're hammering it against athletes to be a competitor in the NPC. So definitely we get you on stage in the NPC.
Oh boy.
Something to think about. Yeah, we'll put that bug in there.
Well, then I want to ask, I feel like the burning question, a lot of people have so much shame around it, but it is a part of the business. It is a part of the sport, is anabolic steroids. Mm-hmm. And like, what percentage do you believe, how many people actually compete and do take anabolic steroids, and how many people get IFBB Pro that do and don't?
But you know, that's it's a really tough question. And I tell you, when I was growing up, I competed for the first 18 years of my career, which has been now 30 something years, to be honest. I heard of anabolic steroids, and we used to read about some of the different ones in the magazines, but we didn't really think much about them because they weren't as easy to access as they are now. Mm-hmm. I think if you go into any gym and whisper a little bit in the locker room, somebody will help you figure something out. None of which is legal, or very much of which is illegal, and most of which is not healthy. And so for me, as a nurse and as an athlete, I was a little bit idealistic. I was very afraid of the dark side, should we say. And I didn't start looking into hormone replacement until I was 35 in my bodybuilding career, you know, I'll be honest. And when I did, I went to a doctor at the advice of another pro that I was training with. And we did my blood work, and we found that there were some things I was deficient in. And he had recommended small amounts of this or that, different hormonal replacement, bioidentical stuff. And I tell you what, it made me feel so much better. And I was like, wow, I wasn't quite as tired. I wasn't as fatigued. And it actually helped my bodybuilding. And so for me personally, I think it's a hard question to answer truthfully and accurately. Mm-hmm. How many percentage of people are using some type of hormone replacement? And I think with the acceptance of it in the medical community now, probably of the vast majority, you know, I'll be real and not be ignorant, and I'll say, you know, probably 99% of pros. I wouldn't say 100%, but just about, but like, all of them.
The Olympia Arnolds, I'm thinking just about almost all.
Sure. And, you know, but along the way, I think education is sorely lacking in that regard in terms of hormone replacement therapy, HRT, TRT. The clinics are coming up all over in the past 10 to 20 years. There's a lot of bad press from, you know, I lived through the era of Barry Bonds and the steroid scandals of baseball, 2005, 2006 era. And I was bodybuilding. I was natural at that time, and or without any medical supervision. Mm-hmm. And you hear, oh, steroid bad, steroid this, steroid that, you know, Barry Bonds and Jose Canseco and all this stuff. And steroids as a real medical therapy got such a bad rap that it became like, you know, this negative, real dark side of athletics. But here's an interesting caveat to that. When you think about the public awareness of steroids, steroids are the sex hormones, either estrogen, progesterone, or testosterone, generally speaking, or derivatives of that, analogs of that. Mm-hmm. When you're 15, 16-year-old female and you're in high school and either you have a rough periods on a regular basis or irregular periods or really tough bleeding, or you become sexually active and your parents take you to a doctor and the doctor prescribes you birth control.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing.
No big deal, right? how many females in, you know, that sexually active age now, probably less than that, automatically just put on hormones. And you don't think about it. That's steroids.
And not to get into this can of worms, but I'm thinking even like since COVID happened or people are getting vaccinated for COVID, that I saw a lot of changes in cycles. Like if you go to mycyclestory.org, there's all of these different people who've had
since the vaccine.
Changes since the vaccine.
Well, yeah. And I mean, don't even get me started on the vaccine. I don't want to get political.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
The sad truth is you have a lot of guys in our community, the bodybuilding world, who have dropped dead in their 30s. And now they can blame steroids because, oh, illicit steroids, drugs, all that, because of the bad rap that hormone replacement has gotten. But when you think about it, every one of the guys that I know or know of, I say, was he vaxxed? Well, yeah, he was traveling to, you know, Thailand to do a seminar. So he got the vaccine so he could get through the airport. He was going to Brazil, got the vaccine, blah, blah, blah. They end up dead. I mean, I could probably name four or five that I know and the pro Olympia level. Yeah, five. So far that I could just think of that died subsequent to getting their vaccine. And a huge influencer, I won't say his name, but anyone who has follows any type of bodybuilding in the community just dropped dead maybe 3 or 4 months ago. He was actually being interviewed on Bradley Martin's podcast before he passed, God forbid. Shame on that. And he was telling Bradley Martin how he had to go to the doctors and they had to filter his blood and he was having all of these particles and things in his blood post-vaccine. 3 weeks later, he's not here anymore, you know, and that's a whole nother podcast, I'm sure. But the vaccine, and they knew what's going on, you know, it's just that's a whole nother ball of wax. Like
yeah.
You said,
blood work like that, just even coming down to at a cellular level, what can be a causing factor? So steroids help in what type of way and how can they also maybe even be a catalyst in other types of way, whether it's good or bad? I'm just curious.
Well, steroids definitely, if you think about what they are, testosterone derivatives for the most part for performance enhancing, right? You also have corticosteroids that are anti-inflammatories that work to break down inflammation. And then you have the female hormones, which also help control or regulate the female flow, you know, in the female monthly cycle. For optimization or for comfort or for birth control, as you know. But when it comes to performance, testosterone is the anabolic hormone that supports muscle mass, muscle building. And when you have the right amount of testosterone in your body, you tend to be able to optimize performance, recovery, and muscle enhancement. But the right level, too much of it, then the side effects build up quicker than the benefits. So there's a certain spot that I would suggest in what I practice is I get my blood work done regularly and my doctor helps me regulate so I can maximize performance. I've been doing this for, I want to say, almost since I really started utilizing the hormone replacement to really maximize performance as an athlete in the gym, enhance recovery with minimizing side effects. Because you can get very, very carried away. And what I've realized a lot of younger guys don't realize is that the side effects build up over time. But the effects that you're looking for don't build up in the same rate. And you might think you're doing great and take a little more. You're doing great. More is always better, but it doesn't work that way when the side effects end up accumulating quick. But over time, that ramp up of side effects ends up being a lot more damaging than a little bit of benefit that go away as you change your dose or you come off cycle. So in terms of muscle building, when you're a young guy up until you're, I'm going to say 25 to 30 when your hormones start to shift. Maximize everything you can do with your training technique, your recovery, your growth. And I wouldn't even consider testosterone replacement because young guys don't need it. Really, until you're 25 or 30, it's not going to do you any good. And maybe it does good for 12 weeks and you take it away and you're suppressed. You're in a worse off situation than you were when you started before. And it takes another 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you know, 3 months to get back to where you were before you started. And what happens during the time while your body's catching up and rebuilding is you're losing the gains that you got. So you end up at the end. I was having this discussion with a kid in the gym this morning. So you take a cycle for 8 to 12 weeks. You make gains faster than you would naturally. But when you're 23, when you take the testosterone or exogenous hormones away, you return to a sub-hormonal baseline because you've suppressed your natural production. And it takes just about as much time to get your body to kick back to where you were. During that time, you're catabolic. You're not anabolic. So at the end of that 6-month journey, you're about where you would have been if you just ate right and trained hard. And that's the reality of it, minus the side effects that accumulate during the time that you're on or the time that you're off, because low testosterone is just as unhealthy as high testosterone. So, I mean, that's a whole nother ball of side effects that men go through when they're dropping their testosterone, which, you know, brings you to another point politically, that men in their 30s and 40s, when they actually need hormone replacement and beyond that, should be on it, even though a lot of the public and even medical practitioners are hesitant to write it in healthy monitored amounts. Low testosterone is just as damaging in many ways as too much testosterone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we're, well, you're almost there, but getting into our 40s and on, you two, you're not there yet. When you guys get there, you'll see that men in their, even now in their 30s and 40s and 50s, just losing their vigor, their energy for life, their passion, because.
I actually do see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So my significant other has he's 43, so it's the same thing. And he just said it's just like a weird out of the, like one day just showed up for him very different, how he energetically is, how his daily performance is, like everything. He's just like, I don't feel like I even have that fogginess too, yeah. Which my psychology performance master over here. I want to ask you, do you train men and women, or do you train mostly females?
So when I was first starting out training, I trained men and women, but right now I train primarily females. I have a couple of male online clients, but personally, I prefer to coach females because I find it to be more fun, honestly, be more relatable.
Well, how does this exact topic relate to how people are with their moods and hormones affect your attitude, your energy,
everything.
So how does that affect men and women separately? And also who are natural and who are not natural?
That's a difficult question because I don't dabble too much in the hormone replacement stuff. I refer my clients to like hormone replacement, like clinics.
And like Catalyst Wellness.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking like, How do they show up with you and they're like, oh my gosh, Emily, like today's really hard. Like,
I sit with them. Yeah, I tell them that it's normal if they're having a bad day, or, you know, if a client didn't like, you know, lose, you know, a pound this week, they gained a pound, or like it happens, especially for women when we're going through, you know, our periods and the luteal phase and stuff like that. Just tell them that it's normal. And they've been doing everything, reassure them that they've been doing everything that they need to attain their goals, eating on track and, you know, hitting the gym, hitting their cardio goals and stuff like that. And reassure them that it's a way of life. I know that a lot of us get goal focused or goal achievement, or I should say outcome focused, when especially we have a weight loss goal or something like that. But all of us tend to neglect the process and the beauty that comes out of it, just by, you know, making smarter decisions, making better decisions for our overall health during the day, instead of just focusing on the number or the dress size or pant size.
Do you think a woman's cycle makes a difference during prep as well?
Oh yeah, totally. I think.
How do you navigate that?
Well, for me personally, it makes it way more dramatic. So it's hard for me to navigate personally. But the way that I've been able to deal with it is just by being really communicative with the people around me, and just being, allowing myself to be vulnerable and honest with how I'm feeling that day. Especially like, cause Pete's my trainer. So like I don't go into training sessions in the best attitude all the time. Sometimes I'm hungry, tired or whatever. But usually I let him know, you know, during the session or before the session, hey, I'm really feeling it today. And usually I'll leave the session feeling a lot better because I'm able to express that, kind of get that off my chest and be able to move through it.
What advice would you give somebody who is maybe in the luteal phase, like they're PMS? I do not want to work out today. Like, how do you get, what's the best motivation or advice for them?
I would say...
And then I'll answer that because I do.
Yeah. You do. You do.
Yeah, I do, for sure.
Because I think everybody's different. But, you know, if it were me, like, I really don't want to train today, I'd say, okay, well, then what do you want to do today?
Yeah.
Yeah. And really answer that. Because at first, the answer might be, oh, I just want to eat a bag of chocolate, or, like, you know, sit on the couch and curl up. But then if I really dig deep and look inside, I'm like, that's really not what I want to do today. And then you know, taking the time to answer that for myself and also not putting too much pressure on myself to have like a killer workout or, you know, to be at the same level of performance as I would be if I'm not on my video days.
Does a client ever over want to eat too?
Oh my gosh, all the time. I mean, I do too. I mean, I'll admit, I used to have, you know, really bad issues with food. It was a huge coping mechanism for me, like for stress and emotion, especially when I was active duty and dieting on the ship, because that was really tough. But, you know, I think the best way to deal with it is just by embracing the fact that, you know, it's okay to want to overeat. It's okay to want to indulge. But is it really what you want?
Is it worth it?
Yeah. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I think there are emotions inside of us. Like when we want to search for that vice or that coping mechanism, there's something in us that we're not addressing. And it takes time to sit with it, figure out what that emotion is or what we're not accessing for ourselves.
Yes.
And then answering it.
Reflecting the why.
Yeah.
All right, P, how do you deal with the woman? Because I also have a guy coach and I'm like, you don't understand. And that's always my excuse. I can come to
well,
you.
Well, I think at least for me, it took learning and it took, you know, a lot of observation and working over time because men don't get it. You really don't get it.
That's right, men don't get it.
It's really true, but well, no, yeah, they don't. But they don't, because they don't get it, they don't understand. And I actually, you know, when we started working together in a distance, actually, when she had moved to Nebraska, and I was just giving her some advice on her coaching stuff, but also on her competing. And she would have these times where, I mean, this woman's a dynamite athlete. 3.5 weeks out of every month, she's crushing it and strong and disciplined and locked on. And I was like, I fell in love with that. And then, you know, for 5 days out of every month or so, she hated me and she hated bodybuilding and she was miserable and don't call me and totally opposite. And I started realizing, I did some research and some digging because there's not a lot of real clinical study on performance athletes and the psych, the menstrual phases. But we started correlating her calendar with her performance. And I started realizing, first and foremost, that there is a very real need because of the hormonal fluctuations for rest and increased nutrients and calories at the time, real just premenstrual, mm-hmm. when women's bodies are going through all of these changes to prepare for pregnancy. And, you know, hydration needs change. Nutritional needs change, protein needs change, carbohydrate needs change, because the body's going through all this work and need for rest. And emotional lability is huge in some people because of the estrogen component. Now, funny enough, and you may see it in your significant other too, as he's going through his testosterone fluctuations as he's evolving through life. And I experienced it myself too when my testosterone levels were in flux or if I ran out of my prescription or something. Men experience estrogen fluctuations too when their environment internally has a spike in estrogen or something similar where your testosterone levels may fall and your estrogen levels are out of balance. Men become emotional, hyper-emotional. They become sad. They become weepy. They become introspective, much like a premenstrual female. And so you have to, as a coach, acknowledge and you have to then be observant enough to pay attention to the calendar times that may lead to that. So you realize a good athlete is not always going to turn into a bad athlete because they're premenstrual. You have to be empathetic. What we try to do, what I try to do is strategize, acknowledge it, and then accept it, but then look for ways where we can still get as much productivity as we can. Like I know when she's coming to the gym, for example, for a session, she's like, I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. It's okay, you know what? Let's go 70% today. Let's mm-hmm. just go through the motions and start pumping. But as soon as I think what ends up happening in the estrogenic phase, luteal phase, premenstrual, is blood sugar levels really get out of whack, especially if you're low carb and you're dieting. Knowing that, you can either do a couple of different things nutritionally to counter that. But what I found is that exercise, light exercise, not necessarily intense bodybuilding exercise, but light exercise regularly tends to regulate blood sugar and can sometimes help bring out a little bit more of a balance in the mood as we're like halfway through the training program. Mm-hmm. We start throwing a little bit more weight on there, a little bit more weight. So by the time we're done, she's exhausted or another female that might be premenstrual and has really put a very good program in, even if it's not breaking records and setting PRs. So if you're aware and you can be observant, and really you have to be able to empathize, but still get the athlete to perform as best as they can during mm-hmm. the time frame. I think you end up with optimal outcomes, because there's nothing else you're going to do except drive them into the ground, and then they're going to go home and binge. And I think that's the thing you want to avoid, is try to control blood sugar. So during those times, a couple of the different researchers that I found have said, if you increase carbohydrates a tiny bit, if need be, to help stabilize those cravings a little bit without going off the Richter, then you can tend to avoid binges. Mm-hmm. And I think that, so you have to be sensitive. And like you said, everybody is a little different. So you mm-hmm. kind of play with every athlete individually. But you have to be empathetic to it, because that real change exists.
I do the same thing with clients too, where it's take out the intensity, still go through the motions.
Yes.
So yeah. If for example, like hip thrusting 400 pounds sounds horrible, then do 225 for more reps, you know, or just figure out what is your best, what feels like it's near failure, that you're not mm-hmm. going to that point of failure or exhaustion, that yep. you're getting your heart rate up when you're doing cardio if you need to. But I'll also just tell my clients, you know what, instead of doing 35 minutes, 40 minutes on the Stairmaster right now, go for a 60, 70 minute walk.
Yeah.
And do something that's less impactful, that you have that. I can also get out of the kitchen, right? So you're going, yes. you're doing yeah. something, you're outside of the house.
Yep.
And even if it means splitting it up into two sessions, if you need to, doing something that it's, how do I say this, is accomplishable. So you feel like you're disciplined, you're still checking off the boxes, you still feel like you're yep. doing something that's successful, and you feel good about yourself
yep.
that you're not failing. Yep. Like, I didn't disappoint myself.
Yep.
Yeah, because that also gets us emotional too.
Yes. And that's the worst thing. And then you end up in that downward spiral.
Do you both preach or practice flexible dieting for your clients? Or do you have them on a strict meal plan?
That's a good question.
So typically I have them on a strict meal plan. But there are fluctuations, or there's wiggle room in there.
And substitution.
Yeah. So I always express to my clients that I want them to be very communicative with me, like when they're, you know, not feeling the diet program, or if they want, you know, other things.
Yeah.
Because we can make room for other things, but we just have to allot room for it.
Yeah. And I'll add to that too. I think, to be honest, compliance is the key, as you know. Consistency and compliance are the key to success.
Mm-hmm.
Compliance is only really, or success can be most measurable, especially when you're controlling bodybuilding and cutting, losing fat or gaining muscle, if you're consistent. And if you're consistent, the easiest way to be consistent is to be strict and regimented. So I give most of my clients a baseline program, and we augment it if we need to on the here and there. But every time I've worked with somebody who says, tell me my macros and I'll figure it out with my Fitness Pal or different types of programs that allow them to figure out macros, it doesn't work. It never works. Unless you're like the beginning phases of a weight loss program where calorie in versus calorie out balance matters, you can control macros. And if they mess up the ratios a little bit, you'll see results anyway, as long as they're in a calorie energy deficit. But once you get to a point where you're trying to augment body composition and you're trying to really regulate body fat versus lean mass, the only way to do that is to control those same energetic sources, which is proteins versus the rest of the energies, by strictly measuring them. And for my program, and I think she's pretty much the same, it all starts with the fundamental of a baseline of protein, because that's what's going to feed your lean mass. So as much as you want to be flexible, it's very, very difficult. That's why we're the coaches, and that's why we're the diet providers or the meal plan providers, because we actually take the time to break it all down so that you fit into certain macronutrient proportions. Because in order to get the results, you have to eat that way every single day, or, you know, majority. The more consistent you can be over time, the easier and the greater the results will be. And if you're allowing somebody to be flexible, as long as they can be accountable, but it's a hell of a lot of work. I mean, that's what they pay for us to design a meal plan. And then to prepare the food, it's hard enough too. I mean, any of you guys out there who are on a diet now or a meal plan, you know, that's the biggest pain in the ass of bodybuilding, is preparing the food. I mean, we were running over here and I said, do you want me to prepare your food? And she said, no, I already got it. Because we don't have a lot of time. We're going to the airport after this and we're running around. And if the food's not prepared, you're setting yourself up. You're preparing to fail, right? You know.
And the people who are doing this, they're most I see when they're introducing flexible dieting, they're using processed foods. It's a lot of protein bars and everything. I just see a lot of processed food, and I'm like, hey, eat real food. Strip off the protein powder, the bars.
And to be honest, none of it really fits. If I'm setting up with somebody with 20% fat, 35% carbohydrate, 45% protein, or whatever the case in the ratios, it's impossible to get all your food to fit in 4 or 5 or 6 meals if you're doing it on the fly. It's just impossible. And even if it was possible, the flexibility, because, carbohydrate is not just a carbohydrate. I think, Lane Norton, when he wrote his IIFYM program way back in the day on bodybuilding.com, essentially, biochemically, sugar is the same as oatmeal, is the same as any other starch when it breaks down. But the process of breaking down is hugely different between a piece of watermelon versus a bagel, versus a steak versus this piece of salmon. They're so different macro and micronutrient wise, the different foods. It's essentially impossible to be compliant and successful on a flexible diet. And I will stand by that. People are gonna say, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, but it's true. Unless you're in the kitchen for 4 hours a day with your calculator and your notebook, that doesn't mean somebody says, coach, I don't like chicken. I'm sick of it. Can I substitute something? And you can say, yeah, let's put some whitefish in there. Mm-hmm. Here's the measurements. Mm-hmm. It has to be precise or fairly precise. That's the hard part of success. Once you get beyond just the entry level.
I also like where people have the freedom or the ability to take their food with them and have that prepared. So it's like people always say, oh, it's really hard to take my meals on the go. But I pack salads to go. I put the dressing on the side. There's ways around it. There's sandwiches that you can make that are still protein based, that are still, like I just do like taco wraps, but I homemade my tacos from scratch, so you could
put have those on the top of the fridge.
So there's ways to go about it. But I think that a lot of people just try to find the excuses. So if somebody was thinking about competing, what would be, let's just say, 3 things that would make them not eligible for competition at the moment? And what are maybe 3 things that would say, okay, this is what you need to make sure that you're in the right, maybe headspace, physical space? Because I don't just want anybody to step on stage and be like, okay, we can do a show in 12 weeks when they need like a 30, 40 week prep, maybe even almost a year.
Well, it's really true. And, I was talking to one of the other more successful coaches, Ryan Benson from Team Zero Gravity, probably about a year ago.
I love Ryan.
Remember? Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Ryan's great. And we were talking because he says, these people come to me 12 weeks out from a show and they say, I want to do a show in 12 weeks. He says, what the fuck can we do? Excuse me. That's Ryan.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, what can we do in 12 weeks? I'm polishing a diamond for the next 12 weeks to get you on stage. If you want to do a show and you're not coming from a place where you've been preparing for 6 months to a year or more, this is where we start. We have to start with a legitimate amount of muscle mass that you build up over time. Mm-hmm. And they say in a best case scenario, if you're working hard and everything is going right internally and externally with training and food, you maybe can build 0.5 pound to 1 pound a month with bodybuilding, with resistance training in the good years. So if you figure that's 5 to 8 pounds of lean muscle mass in a year, optimally, it's not a lot of change. And so when you're getting, we talk about competition in terms of stripping away body fat, you have to be realistic with the fact that if you don't have a lot of muscle mass, it'll take you, like you said, 40 weeks, even a year to prep for the point where you can cut to reveal. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that we do is we also have a recomposition program. So where people can get lean and lose fat at the same time we're building, because you can do both. There are people that, a lot of people say, oh, you can't, they're going in opposite directions because one is a calorie deficit and one is not. But building muscle,
it's possible.
It is absolutely possible. Mm-hmm. Building muscle takes 2 things. It takes a surplus of protein and it takes properly applied resistance training. That's it. You can be in a calorie deficit as long as you have a surplus of protein to feed muscle building. And then even if you're hungry or fatigued or whatever the case, as long as you can train properly to stimulate muscle growth and you feed it, you can build muscle. So you can actually build muscle in a fat loss environment. And so a lot of our, like at first, cosmetic bodybuilding clients that eventually say, I might want to do a show someday, but I want to start here. So we can then give them a 3-month program to get them to the point where then they want to see what they look like when we take away a little bit of that body fat. Now they're ready for the beach. Now we can see about getting them on stage for competition. Mm-hmm. So yeah, with a lot of people that are kind of fit, have been training already, we approach it with a recomposition program.
I like the foundation of muscle, number one, too.
You got to have that, yeah.
I think a strong mental health, because I've even had clients who've had prior eating disorders, and I've told them we need to make sure that everything feels like it's not another control factor, or this will get you into that trigger point of going back into an eating disorder. So I think emotionally is another factor for it. So people are headstrong, yeah. And we're so critical of ourselves, even in the most healthy state mentally, when mm-hmm. we get ready for stage, that leanness and that competition level next to your person, you know, that is,
it is tough. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you have anything to say about that, psychologist, but
yes.
But to be honest, you know, when I grew up, and I share this openly, but I had bulimia as a teenager, and that's actually what got me into bodybuilding.
And, really?
Mm-hmm, yep. And I binge and purge pretty regularly, to the point that I started losing all my muscle mass. And that's what actually got me into bodybuilding. But the emotional need for control mm-hmm. actually lent itself very well to the bodybuilding lifestyle. So it actually was exchanging one vice for another, I think, in the beginning. But it was taking that energy, hunger for control, and applying it in a positive way rather than a negative way.
Bingo. Same thing here yeah. too. I want to come yeah. back to you on that, because I felt the same way, where I felt like my eating, and I was like, maybe I'm just attracting this because this has been my story before and I've talked about it and I've shown people how to get out of it. But I actually felt that, and again, this isn't my biggest recommendation for anybody, please seek treatment if this is something that sure. you're going through. But I felt like I had a problem, and just like a math problem, it was like I found a solution to that math problem. Is what it felt like
yeah.
being able, and not just counting calories, but actually counting nutrients and seeing a positive change.
Well, and that was actually for me. And I like to tell people, bodybuilding saved my life 3 times. Mm-hmm. And the first time really was when I actually found bodybuilding, and I realized I was on a path of self-destruction. I didn't realize it as a kid. You don't realize what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But it ended up, if I had not discovered bodybuilding and just a minor shift in direction from controlling my food versus controlling my output, and then my binging gave me enough of a feeling of comfort that I actually had a feeling of control. And in a very short time, my body changed, and that gave me a further feeling of control that reinforced the discipline of the bodybuilding. And it ended up being very positive, because then I went into my nursing degree. We actually spent a whole year, 2 semesters on eating disorders and the psychology piece of that. So it was fascinating. I was like, oh my God, that's me. And I didn't realize bulimia. I didn't think guys can't have bulimia. But you know what? When I learned about it in school, I was like, oh yeah, that sounds like what I was doing. Oh yeah. No, I wasn't anorexic. I was interested. And then you learn all of that different stuff. And I realized how powerful bodybuilding was as a feeding that craving that you're missing, you know, mm-hmm. like you were talking about. So it makes me, number one, also, I feel empathetic towards people that are struggling with food. So for many people that come to me, and, you know, I do get my share of people, mostly females, I think, that struggle with body image superficially, that can, or I would say on the surface, so they can actually talk about it. Men don't talk about that. They just want to be ripped, want to have big abs, big chest, and, you know, defined abs and stuff. But when women say, you know, I sometimes have a problem with food, and It actually, I said, well, let's do this. Let's get you on a plan. Let's get you in the gym. And then we kind of start to observe, you know, around the luteal phase and that kind of thing and the cycles. But it ends up, I think, giving most people a feeling of control that's not so destructive. Mm-hmm. So I think that, along with, like you said, get help if you need it, for sure. But bodybuilding is very powerful, I think, for that.
So a strong mental headspace.
Yes.
A good baseline of muscle. And then I feel like this would be one of the reasons that I feel like people need to either decide to have a competition or not, is relationship support from maybe family members. Oh, yeah. Or partner or spouse. I've had clients where they almost got into a divorce because of it, you know?
Yes. So, oh yeah. Yeah. If you don't have a support system, it's exactly like that. You're either going to lose anybody in your space who don't understand, because they don't. And it is very selfish. It's very self-centered sport. But because you're trying to maximize every aspect of your life, and that takes self-discipline, and it takes being selfish, mm-hmm. you know, and most normal people, I want to say civilians, don't understand that. And that's okay. It's not for them. But if they're in your life and they're pulling down on you, it's going to make it that much harder to have any success.
Yes.
And I see that a lot with my client, a lot of my clients.
If somebody isn't getting the support they're looking for and they want to do a show, what advice would you give them?
If they want to do a show, then what I say is like what we had talked about earlier, you have to put yourself first. And then if you can't do that because you're getting opposition on the home front, then that's something you have to come to grips with on your own. You know, you decide to change the home front or change your goals, you know, because you can't do it on the down low. You can't body, but because it's too pervasive, every bodybuilding, it takes every aspect of your day, your time restraints, even for just for the short 12-week prep that you're on, food, diet, you know, everything has to be certain, laid out a certain way to optimize your outcome. And then if you don't have the support at home, it's really difficult to do. That's hard. That's really hard. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I've lost several relationships over people that just didn't get it. They thought they did. Oh, I like dating the big guy in the gym. Well, you know, and why can't you go out for dinner? Why can't we go to Big Mac, you know, McDonald's? And just, sorry, not for me.
Yeah, that's okay. It's your life to choose.
Well, yeah. You have to put yourself first, you know, and it's the only way, like they say, you know, when the bag comes down on the airplane, put it on yourself before your child. Because if you're not strong and you're not happy and healthy, you're certainly not going to make other people happy, you know. But then if you can feel good about yourself, then you can put that energy out there, you know, critical.
As coaches, how is it in supporting your clients too? Because they need that coach's support too. So what is it like being there, being emotional support system, their disciplinary system, right? You have to whip them in the shape, literally.
Yeah. You mean while you're dieting yourself or just being there?
As a coach,
as a support system?
Yeah, as a support
system. Oh, yeah. You can answer that one.
Well, I think you have to be, first and foremost, empathetic to whatever they're going through. And it can be kind of draining, especially like for me personally, because I sometimes get too invested in my clients and their goals. So if they're not putting in a lot of effort when I'm putting in, you know, so much effort, it gets kind of discouraging or emotionally draining for me. So I've had to come up with, you know, emotional boundaries for myself.
Yeah.
But overall, it's an amazing process. I feel like coaches, teachers, mentors, you know, we chose to be in these positions for a reason, because we are leaders in the community and we want to help other people. And there's a lot of beauty and just transformation that we get to see and be a part of. And I think that's amazing. So I love it. I love being there even on the hard days, because every day is a learning lesson. Everybody's different. And I often learn a lot from my clients too.
Every day. You definitely have to position yourself, in my opinion, as someone that's accessible enough. You know, draw your boundaries as you see fit. Personally, me, I answer every text message I get, at least at this point, because I know for me as an athlete, sometimes I need my coach and sometimes I need his expertise, or sometimes I need him to say, you know what, you're doing okay, or you know what, you're fucking up, but you need to change and we can still do this. So ultimately, people, all of us on any level, live off of hope. And if we lose hope, then everything's lost. And so if you have that stability that you can actually cling to that person to say, you know what, you're okay. You messed up a little, but you're okay. Let's correct it. Then I think it's really important, especially for a bodybuilding athlete, because bodybuilding is such it's a self-critical, individualized activity that encompasses everything. It's one of the toughest sports there is for that. And you need someone that can be that stability for you, that rock. And I think that's the coach's role. You know, as much as you have energy yourself, but it's like you said, you have to then give yourself your boundaries as well and allow yourself the ability to recharge too.
Yeah.
Because you can also give too much, you know, but I think that's the role of the coach, is to be able to be there and help your clients overcome their doubts and their shortcomings.
The word boundary stuck out to me already. And Emily, you said it already. And P, you said it twice right after.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I actually very much admire that, because my coach also answers every single text message that he gets from his clients. And he's really good about doing that right away, as soon as he can, even if he's training in person, gets to it right after. And by the end of the night, he goes through all the messages. And he's taught me that, because I think when I first started coaching, I used to get anxiety doing that, and I would kind of just put it off, or like do it once in the morning, once in the evening. And I realized that we're like parents when we are coaches. We don't just want to, you know, we want to respond right away because the kid's also wanting to hear from their parent, right? Yeah. But I also recognize that clients are checking in with us weekly and, you know, doing all of that they're supposed to do to ask us or be there in attention to us, they're attentive to us. So it's like when we are checking in on them, it's the same thing as like the parent telling the kid they love them even when the kid doesn't say I love you back. It's really important to be there for them and check in on them. Really good on that.
Well, and you know the other thing too, I found that I'm a better coach when I allow myself that responsibility because I hold myself accountable. And if I forget or I don't do something and the text is coming in, hey coach, you said you were gonna, or coach, I have a question, or I feel like if I can connect with each one of my clients on a regular basis, I feel like I'm giving them a super service. But I also, if I don't hear from them in 2 or 3 days, I don't have the resources anymore to hunt them down. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like I'm not doing my job. So it helps myself, for me to hold myself accountable to responding quickly. You know, and it was funny. I had an experience. I got a new client last week in the gym and we had our first training session, but he's been with me online for about a month. And he had a ton of questions at first. So, you know, in between clients and things, I was just answering them quickly. And he happened to say that. He's like, you know, my last coach was worthless. I was lucky if I got a response every 3 days.
I hear that often too.
Yeah. And he said, you know, for you, you're right there all the time. He said, it's part of my job. You know, while I'm on the clock, I'm answering. Because it's not that much effort. You know, it's really not. And if you can answer small questions soon, you can build up expertise and faith within them. Like I always like to say, I like to be a fly on the wall for my clients. So even if I know what they're doing, so I can see why they were getting the results that we're doing. Then we can learn their rhythms and their habits, good and bad, and how to maximize their outcomes.
So back to boundaries, because I love that too, texting. But I'm like, obviously, if we're at Christmas dinner or something, we want to spend time with our families, be attentive to our families. So how do you both set boundaries? And maybe one would be not being too emotionally invested, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like adoption. I'm like, wait, we're fostering our kids now. We're going to release them back into the wild.
Yeah. It's really true, though. It's really true.
So being too emotionally invested and then also being especially emotionally invested in yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think,
how do you do that? Both. Each could be. You do it. Probably two different methods.
Man, that's a really good question. I just make sure I stay to my routine. And I pretty much told my clients to do that as well. Not because that, you know, we're creatures of habit. Humans are creatures of habit. But sticking to a routine, sticking to a meal plan or schedule, it builds self-efficacy. It builds self-trust. So if you can continue to build that trust within yourself by just doing the small things that go towards your overall arching goal or what you feel like aligns with you and your being, you know, you just go, you go with it because that's how you stay invested in yourself. It's always like putting that little, you know, investment, you know, doing my cardio, you know, doing my meal plan.
Well, daily deposits.
Yeah, daily deposits.
You know, it's really interesting because I've been bodybuilding for 30 something years and I've had three major coaches in the pro side of my career, the top end of my career. And I realized that each of the coaches had different styles. One wanted check-ins every 5 days, one once a week, and one wanted official pictures when he asked for them, which could be tomorrow or could be 3 days, but it's usually every two or three times a week. And that was the one I tended to get the best results from, was the one that was more, I felt like he was there, and tangible. And it over the course of time, it builds a relationship of trust, not just trust that he's going to answer my text message, but trust that if he's giving me a program and then he's far off doing other activities and I can't get to him for a day or two or three, I feel like maybe I'm out of sight, out of mind, like I don't care. And then, you know what? He's not going to see me for 3 days. I might eat the M&Ms that I shouldn't have eaten. That will show up in my pictures, but he's not going to see them. I have time to change my behaviors. But if I have a coach who's invested enough in me to respond the next day and say, why'd you eat those M&Ms? I can see it on your fat butt or whatever. You know, you want your clients, in my opinion, to get the best results because it's your business. And for me, it's also my passion. But if I am invested as much as they are, then what I find is that the results come better. The best way to do that is to make them feel I'm right there. Mm-hmm. I want to be there. You better text me tomorrow. You better text me tomorrow. You better text me tomorrow because I'm not going to text you. But I'm, in order to get that, I need to follow up. Mm-hmm. And because if I don't follow up, then they're going to text me. Nothing's going to come. That's not going to reinforce their good behavior. And I think besides holding them accountable with their daily text messages, like, oh shit, I gotta tell coach, better not have those M&Ms. You know, it's the same with me. I tell you, I'll get back to you by the end of the day. I will. Usually it's within 3 or 4 hours. It holds me accountable. And then that way I don't forget to do something I told them I was going to do. Or when I'm training myself, if they're working hard, I'm the coach. I better be working harder because I'm the boss man of this relationship. So I make sure I get my training in, I get my food in. It holds me accountable also as an athlete for myself. Mm-hmm. So I take advantage of my clients' need for accountability by holding myself accountable, which, because if I can't do it, how can I teach it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so for me, that's using their energy for myself. So that's helps me and my compliance.
How many years has 619 Muscle been around for?
We opened in 2006 in TG. Mm-hmm. Yep,
so almost 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
How many clients do you think have walked through the doors and been under your wing?
Literally thousands.
Yeah.
Literally thousands. Probably, you know, we have, of course, a team of people that have then since graduated or moved on to do their own thing. So it's really funny. You know, I have a couple of clients who will come and say, oh, you know, I looked at this coach, I looked at that coach, I trained him, coached him, turned him pro, did this. And over the years, you see to yourself, like, anyone you could name in the region on Instagram now that you find as a coach, probably 80% of them have come through our doors and have been on stage with me at one time or another. I recently hired an online manager to help me with my reach out to online people. And he said, coach, I need you pictures of you with this athlete or that athlete. And I'm like, oh, wow. I don't know if he'll give me a testimonial anymore because he's a competitor now, you know. But when you go back through all of my photos and stuff, it's like, I coach that one. Yeah, I counted over 1,000 people that we put on stage.
Wow.
Minimum. Because you figure 20 or 30 or 40 a year over 20 years. It's a lot. Yeah. It's been amazing. You always learn. Always learning stuff, too.
Do you have favorites when it comes to clients?
I definitely have not favorites. I'm like, I'm glad they're gone. I would never, you know. I mean, everyone I think. Yeah.
Thank you for leaving. Bye.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love all of my clients. I really do for different reasons. I think the truth is I love bodybuilding. And I'm so blessed. And we're so blessed. We talk about it all the time that you can get up in the morning, even if you're physically tired, and not dread going to work because you get to meet people who are, that 1 hour they get with you is just gold for them. And they just, we do the thing that I love to share. Mm-hmm. When we first started working together, I don't know if you remember, but she had come into the office when I was having a horrible day in the Navy, trying to figure out how she was going to schedule her training for the week. And she came in, just talking to me for a minute. And I said, listen, and I reached under the desk. You remember this? And I pulled out this. I went like this. I'm going to share something. I put it on my desk and I opened it up. She's like, what are you doing? I said, look, watch right here. See this? She's like, there's nothing there. I said, yeah, this is body. I'm going to give you a little bit. I'm keeping the rest for me because I love it. That's going to change your life. And she's like, there's nothing there. I said, put it in a safe place. Because that's bodybuilding. And can you imagine how amazing it is that that lifestyle saved my life, like I said, literally 3 times. I wouldn't be here if I didn't have the weights on a daily basis. And I'm not the only one who's had that story. But so, you know, we're blessed. We can share it with people, you know, and that's a blessing. And that's the most amazing thing.
For anyone that's listening right now, P is carrying an empty spirit box full of bodybuilding spirit. And he's giving a little bit to everybody.
Kind of like the Catholic priest at the Eucharist.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's really true. You know, you can't really hold bodybuilding. You can live it and you can love it because it's so empowering.
It gives you a sense of purpose knowing that you can push past the resistance.
Yes, it really does. And the thing about bodybuilding for me is even in the times of COVID, the recession of 2012 that killed my business and killed my whole financial situation. I mean, I can't even tell you. 2008, 9, and 10, I lost everything. 2 homes, thousands and hundreds of thousands. I used to be a baller. I had money. I lost everything. It started at zero.
The big crash that happened?
Yeah. 08, 09, 010, and on. And anyway, we still, 619 was still building and growing, and, you know, COVID almost got us, but it didn't. But the point is, when you have bodybuilding, you get into the gym that day, you always leave with hope that you've done something that will better your life the next day. You always become stronger. And that's a beautiful thing. Like, you know, a buddy of mine, Guy Cisternino, he does a lot of motivational stuff online, and he says, nobody ever leaves the gym feeling like they wasted their time. You know, nobody ever leaves the gym saying, damn, I shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. You always leave feeling way better. Sometimes a lot better, sometimes a little better. But you never leave feeling that you shouldn't have gone. And I think that's bodybuilding. It gives you hope that you will be better tomorrow. And that's gotten me through a lot of shit over the years.
How did it save your life the third time?
I was going through a very, 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 very dark time. And at first, I couldn't sleep. I'm not a big drinker, but I was drinking a lot at bedtime, to be honest, because I couldn't sleep. I had too much stress on my mind and violence and ugliness and fear and anxiety and not a lot of money. And,
which, you know, drinking doesn't help with sleeping anyway.
Well, I thought it would take away the racing mind. And then my buddy said, you should smoke weed. It's legal now. And I'm like, I don't like the smell. I don't. So I started getting baked and drinking. And then this was for a very short period of time. And I remember that wasn't helping. And I was stressed because I felt like my job was going away. I was selling nutritional supplements at the time. And my buddy said, you should buy a puppy. Loving something else other than yourself will give you something to live for, because I know you're so depressed and all this. I said, I'm not fucking depressed. I'm just broke and I'm stressed and this and that. And I was drinking at night and I wasn't sleeping because I was worried about working in the morning. I bought a puppy. And then I ended up waking up in the middle of the night on the kitchen floor with a bunch of puke and tequila and the puppy licking my face because he had to pee. And then he peed and then there was shit everywhere on the floor. And I said, I can't be doing this. And I would take a shower and I'd walk the dog and come back and I smelled and my apartment smelled. It was a terrible time for me. And I don't mind talking about it now, but I said, I got to get back to the gym. And after about probably a month or two of darkness, I still had my gym membership. And I went in there with clothes that weren't even washed because I was not in the right frame of mind. And I started exercising. By the time I left, I felt better. And I said, I got to do this again tomorrow. So I started doing that. And on a regular basis, I was checking the boxes. I was eating my food. I was being disciplined, penny pinching and saving my money. And things got a little better financially. Then they got a lot better. And then before you know it, I was back to healthy. Started cleaning my apartment. And my dog was licking my face and not licking throw up and tequila. And stopped drinking, stopped smoking weed. And it was a short period of time that was one of the darkest pieces. My dad, an old Marine Italian guy who got me into bodybuilding, he had called me. And he said, at the time, he knew something was not right in my voice. And he said, what the hell is going on with you, Pete? And I said, oh, Dad, I'm going through a time. He's like, you need to get help. He says, I would never tell you to go to therapy. I don't believe in that shit. But he needed therapy more than anything. But he said, but if you don't go get some help, I'm going to come out there and kick your ass. And my dad could have done it. So I went and I started talking to somebody else.
Somebody Marine answer.
Yeah.
I'm a military brat too.
Yeah. And he said, fucking go take care of yourself. So I got some help from my health insurance at the time. Helped me pay for it. And I just went once a week. And then she was cute. Remember I told you about her? My therapist.
Oh my God.
She's a cute little Latin girl. And she wore these little skirts. And I was like, you're cute. She said, you're cured. Get out of here. That was after my crying, binging in episode. Catharsis. But no, it actually really helped me to talk to somebody, which I had never done that before. And I was a proponent and a believer in therapy, too. But still, bodybuilding. Every day was there, and the weights were my primary source of therapy. Because they're always heavy, and you always end up feeling better than you did. And checking the boxes.
I believe that to be 100% true.
Yeah.
So for that person right now that could be going through the dark times, I think that's the biggest advice that we could tell them is start putting the self-efficacy in, you know, building the habits, building the self-confidence, telling yourself you can do the hard things, because that's how you manage life. I feel like the things we do in the gym really help us navigate what's going on outside in this world.
You know, along those lines too, Brie, I'll share too. You know, for anybody out there that might be going through it now, you're probably listening or watching and you think to yourself, they don't know. They don't know. And I was there too, twice anyway, where nobody understood. Nobody got it. I couldn't go to the gym. I didn't have any clean clothes. You know, I didn't give a fuck. After there's a point you hit rock bottom where you're really like, you know what? I have to do something or lay here and die. And at that point, you do something. And that something can be as easy as doing push-ups and then walking and then breathing, because oxygen will change your mindset. When you breathe heavy, you're pushing out the bad and pulling in the good, and you start to feel healed and better, and the endorphins kick in. And then you know what? You got through it for an hour. I tell you, during the recession, the big crash, 2009, 10, 11, and 12, while I was going through it, a lot of my clients were losing everything. I had some corporate real estate people that were just, buildings were just, you know, going under. And all they could do is say, Pete, you going to be here tomorrow? And I didn't tell them when I was going through it. They'd go, yeah, I'll be right here. And they would come in the next day and they're like, beaten down. I say, okay, put it out the door. Let's train. An hour later, they go, oh, thank you. I felt so much better. And they always had that little bit of money to pay me, even if it was half price, or they had to wait till next week, you know, and we got through it together, all of us. But bodybuilding will do that. It will give you hope. You just have to let it in. And even if it's for an hour, that hour a day is what you live for a short time, you're living, you know, and then before you know it, you'll be okay. And it, things do get better because you get, at least you get stronger, you know.
I even think about, I just heard this yesterday and I'm like, I need to do a podcast episode on this alone, is emotion plus repetition. And So I think about when people want to visualize what it's like to be on stage, to be winning the crown or winning the sword and getting the overall, right? And they want to visualize it. They need to put in the repetition of actually seeing themselves on that stage, picturing the win happening, and they need to put the emotion into it. And the same goes for performing on stage as well. And I feel like that's a psychological thing for sure, mm-hmm. that people don't do enough of.
Well, no, absolutely. Definitely. Visualization. I want to ask you something that's, I don't want to be off the topic, but do you remember when she won her overall Ultimate Warrior year before last? And it was the most amazing thing because it was kind of like against all odds. She had come back here, didn't have a job, didn't really have much going on, had school, and was just barely making it. And we started working together, and it was, every day was a struggle in the gym. Every day was a struggle. Every day was a struggle. And as I watched the physique evolve, I started saying, holy shit, she might actually do well. And I started watching, and you know, we kept going, we kept pushing, and she ended up getting on that stage, and it was like, there's no denying that class win was there. And I was like, wow, this is pretty amazing. And do you remember, what was your visualization or your mindset when you were going through the reps? I'm just curious because I don't think we really ever talked about that. It's being about visualizing.
Your emotion plus repetition. What was it like?
Yeah.
I was imagining myself being the happiest I've ever been. I think it was the one show prep that I didn't cheat on my diet ever. And that was because I didn't want to get on that stage and feel like, you know, I didn't give everything that I could have. And every day that was my challenge, like give it all I got. And, you know, win, lose, or draw, it was just put it all out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to step on that stage, no matter what I look like, just knowing that I did everything that I could.
So it was crazy because I saw that as we started the prep, it was challenging and it was tough. And she picked up this rhythm and this grit. And I was like, okay, I'm going to push her a little bit. I want to push her a little bit more because I think she's going to handle it without breaking. And then we pushed a little bit more of the cardio and we pushed a little bit more of the weights. We pushed harder, pulled back a little bit on those carbs. And she was, especially around, you know, the premenstrual phase, crying, doing cardio. And I was like, don't stop doing cardio. I don't care if you're crying.
You know, been there. She's like, crying on the machine.
Yeah. And then mad and then pissed at me. And it was amazing to just watch because we got to that show and I was like, you're going to win this fucking show. You might win the whole thing. You look amazing. And it was just, you know, sometimes you go in walking and it's like there's a spotlight on the person all night and you're like, holy shit.
Your aura was.
It's bright. True. It's really true. You can see it. It's amazing. I won the Massachusetts State Championships in 1994 and I maybe my fourth or fifth show ever. And my buddy was videotaping me at the time with one of those beta or VHS videotapes. So I used to watch the victory. And it was funny because no matter where I went on the stage, it was like the light was always on me. And I said, boy, that's kind of a weird optical illusion. But I watch it now. And now you know you watch and you can't help but see it. It happens sometimes. It's really cool. It's energy. But I saw that and That's why I wanted to bring it up, because it was pretty badass.
But truthfully, I don't think you can get there without proving to yourself that you deserve it, that you've earned it. Because once you've done everything that you could, like, you know, it doesn't matter. The trophy, the placement, or whatever, because you've already won by proving it to yourself that you deserve it. You're a winner.
Right there is where people talk about the journey and not the destination.
It's so true. It's so true. I remember I got worked with Hani Rambod when I did the 2010 Mr. USA. And it was crazy because he said he would only work with me if I did absolutely everything he said. So I said, I'll show you. And I said, I'm going to do everything to a T. And I did. And, you know, when I woke up at 3 a.m. to go to the bathroom before the prejudging that morning, I looked in the mirror and I was, shit. I surprised myself at how nasty lean I was. I was like, I don't care. Right now is heaven. I don't care who's on stage with me. I am nasty lean. My glutes were all feathered and did my tricep like this. Was just like fucking shredded. And you know what's so funny? I got on stage and I was the first call out of like 40 guys, and I wasn't the biggest guy. And I said, don't matter. Because like you said, you check all the boxes, you've done everything you've committed to the program to do, you win. It doesn't matter. I took second at that show, but it's an amazing experience when you can actually hit what Maslow calls that peak performance, or, you know, the peak experience. And that's a big part of why I love bodybuilding and sharing that with people, because you realize there's short glimpses of your life that are your moments that you're like, this is awesome. This is living, you know, amazing, amazing stuff.
So where will 619 Muscle go in this coming year? We were just talking about plans for January.
Well, I'm stoked. Like we talked about earlier, we're starting a podcast because I really want to be able to reach out to the community bigger than I have now and bigger than we have the access to. I've been a very stubborn dinosaur when it comes to social media and getting out there, just because I'm very much a hands-on guy, and you know, it's more for the younger kids. But I realized that there's so much that we have to offer people in 619 Muscle experientially, and just love in terms of love of the sport and love for everything that it can bring to a person, enriching them. And the community at large that we have is strong. Mm-hmm. But I would love to make that community much bigger, to be able to share a bodybuilding experience with everybody who can really benefit from it on all levels. So our goal is to push our social media. Like I said, I hired somebody that can help us reach more people, and reach more people I think one of the biggest obstacles to success for a lot of people is there are so many trainers out there now because of social media who are doing well, making money, God love them, but maybe don't have the understanding or the expertise or the tenure to be able to really help people and reach them for what they really need, you know? And so that's a goal of ours, is to expand, to touch more people.
I love when I'm in prep, or even had clients in prep still this past year, where they're just throwing in podcasts from, you know, bikini contest prep, or like I'm thinking Bikini in the Brain, or like other podcasts where it's related to prep and competition. And so they have that motivation. They're getting in their Stairmaster minutes, you know, all of that. Think that's really good to have more of that. We don't have enough of it. And people need to be motivated through health and fitness while doing the deed at the same time.
Yeah. So, you know, we're excited about that. And I know our friend Brett Seeley has been after me for a while to start getting more into social media, but especially podcasting. We've got a pretty good YouTube presence, but social media now seems to be, with podcasting, a lot more able to be accessible in the short term. So my goal is to start some short-term segments like we had talked about earlier. And we want to also utilize her reach and her expertise, and maybe even in working with you too, more to talk about the female side of bodybuilding. Because there's, you know, as a nurse myself, I've realized in working with a few female athletes how important body image is and how impactful it is in today's society, the perspective that society at large places and the pressure on women in a certain objectification kind of way that's very, very unhealthy, that creates bad self-image perceptions, and how bodybuilding can help counter that in the right context. You know, and so we've spent a lot of time talking about that type of stuff, and, you know, bringing in positive self-image and building on that, especially from a female standpoint.
Making bodybuilding healthy again.
Yes, I love it. That's a good one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as for the clientele, I'm curious if you guys just got a gym out in, I'm trying to think of the actual name of town, but I just, East County.
Well, it's right on the line of El Cajon and Lakeside.
Yes.
Right on the line. Yep. And, but it's El Cajon by the mailing address.
It's beautiful. It's big.
Thank you. We're so excited. It's just big enough. And we do our personal training there. And we also have it open to the public to come in and train. But it's got everything you need. We have a booty room that's specifically designed for the posterior side of life, because that's really important
for
men and women.
Yes.
You know, the one thing I like about it, we're still building it up to keep it friendly and comfortable to the speed of where everybody's very serious, but there's no attitude. If you have attitude, you don't belong here. You're at the door. And women are respected and made to feel safe, because there's a lot of gyms where, you know, it's a hookup place or a market where people go to meet. You don't need to come to the Human Elite and meet. You can come and train, and then you can go to 609 Muscle or Denny's across the street or Starbucks and get a coffee, you know, and you can come and, you know, meet people and have a community, but it's not a dating site, you know, and I want females especially to feel safe coming in and being able to train and look at themselves in the mirror and feel comfortable with it. And I think it's really nice because everybody, all the members seem to be that way too right now. And so we want to try to keep that vibe good for everybody. We have a little posing section, and we have a lot of these little silly things, tripods everywhere, so that the younger generation can do their thing, which I'm so not used to, I'll be honest with you, but they like it. And we have our very special purposefully designed lighting so that everybody looks ideal. We call it our anabolic lighting. So the gym is cool because it's, I think, good for the positive vibes of the bodybuilding.
What is your 2024 goal for 619 Muscle and for you as well, Emily?
You go first.
No, go first.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, still recovering from 2012 and the financial situation we had. And then COVID was a major blow to our business because all the gyms were closed except for TG. And our business really took a hit. So we're working
still
our way.
Still on the hush-hush.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're really working our way through debt. We expanded, and we're doing fine. Actually, we're blessed to be doing good. But I would like to be in a place where I can continue to invest more financially in growing the bodybuilding community. You know, I would like to start a supplement line for us. That is like Q4 goals for 2024. I just need to get the financing right. And then I really have a ton of ideas for apparel. And we used to do apparel kind of on the down low when we first opened because we had more resources, but it's something that people really are asking for on an ongoing basis, 619 Muscle apparel. So as I'm finishing up working on the website, we'll have a retail spot on the website and we'll talk more about that. And of course, I want to put all my athletes on stage with trophies and pro cards. So we have, you know, our goals are not lofty, but they're definitely ambitious. And I'm just very thankful that God has allowed us to continue to be here and operate. We've been here 18 years plus, and we don't plan on going anywhere, you know, and just continue to grow and become financially solid and viable. We're good, like I said, in this economy. If you're open, you're good, but we're doing good. The gym is actually doing way better than we thought it would be for the short time it's been around. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. I think together, as those two continue to solidify, another 18 months from now, we should be in a really, really good spot where we can look to expand further.
I mean, you guys have a plethora of clients. So
yeah, you know, we're blessed.
And expanding always.
And we're doing good. And I want to continue to just touch people and not have to stress about, you know, I got into business, you know, on the personal side of it because it allowed me to touch people and gave me a platform. But I never got into it to be successful business-wise because I hate business. I love bodybuilding, and any business that allows me to bodybuild and help others bodybuild is a blessing for me. And now I'm realizing as I get older, you have to do both, and I'm embracing it assertively, but business was never my passion. But it's becoming one of those things that the more powerful we can become as a business, the more people we can reach, and then I can spread that good word of bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. So that's really our goal, is to continue to grow and to be stable.
Love that. Yeah. Emily, now your time is up.
Well, my goal is also to continue to grow.
Yeah.
But I've taken this whole year off just to develop my business, finish up my school, So I'm planning to step on stage again next year. Hopefully chase that pro card at USA's. I'm putting it out there. Yes. July 2024. Yeah. So yeah, that's my primary goal.
I love that.
Yeah.
Las Vegas is a great place to go get your pro card.
So we're going to have fun. It's going to be a busy year. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good.
Well, thank you both for being on the show, for sharing everything.
Thank you.
That was very knowledgeable for all the people interested in bodybuilding. Now, I mean, you already have me scratching my head, like, could I go back on stage?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. There's not even a doubt.
I can't begin. I'm like, I could do that too. And, you know, it's like you go through the phases. We always like, I'll never do another show. Okay, I'm ready to do another show.
Yeah. But it's like you said earlier, either on or off the air, you said you have to find your why. You know? Mm-hmm. And we said, you know what? I'm ready for the challenge because it takes everything. But, you know, you have the physique, you have the shape, you have the muscle. And when you light that little fire in there, which will happen sooner or later because you're a competitor, then it's going to be amazing.
It never leaves us.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So. Thank you both.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. Make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.